Welcome to Tech, Terror, and Trade, Espionage in the Digital Age, Episode 6, The Dark Web, a Haven for Digital Espionage.
It's a fascinating and frankly unsettling topic, this whole notion of the dark web as a breeding ground for espionage. It's like something out of a spy novel, but it's very real.
Exactly. It's this hidden layer of the internet, right? A place where anonymity thrives and where, unfortunately, all sorts of illicit activities, including espionage, can take place. I mean, accessing it isn't like just typing in a website address. It takes specialized software and configurations like Tor, I2P, or Freenet.
Yeah, those are the big ones, those anonymity networks. And that anonymity is a double-edged sword, of course. It can be a vital tool for whistleblowers, journalists, activists, people who need to communicate securely and without fear of censorship. But it also creates a haven for criminals, including spies.
Absolutely. It's a real challenge for law enforcement and intelligence agencies. How do you track and monitor activities in a space designed for anonymity? And the terminology itself can be confusing. You know, darknet, dark web, deep web. People often use these terms interchangeably, but they're important distinctions.
Right. The deep web is essentially anything not indexed by search engines, which includes a lot of perfectly legitimate content like online banking portals or cloud storage. The darknet, on the other hand, is a subset of the deep web that requires specific software or configurations to access, like we talked about. And the dark web is the content on those darknets, much of which is accessible between services like Tor's hidden services or Onion services.
Got it. So the dark web is the content on those darknets, much of which is accessible through services like Tor's hidden services or Onion services.
Got it. So the darknet is the network itself, and the dark web is the content you find on that network. And then there's cyber warfare, which is a whole other layer of complexity. Oh, absolutely. Cyber warfare takes things to a different level. It's not just about stealing information. It's about using digital attacks to cause real-world harm, disrupting critical infrastructure, spreading propaganda, manipulating markets. Some argue that true cyber war hasn't happened yet, that no cyber attack has reached the scale and impact of conventional warfare. But others would argue that attacks like Stuxnet, which targeted Iran's nuclear program, were definitely acts of cyber warfare.
Right, because Stuxnet caused physical damage, right? It wasn't just data theft, it sabotaged equipment. And there's a real debate about where the line is, you know? What constitutes an act of cyber war versus, say, cyber espionage or cyber terrorism?
Yeah, it's a blurry line. And the fact that non-state actors can play such a significant role in cyberspace further complicates things. Think about groups like Anonymous or even just small teams of highly skilled hackers. They can have a huge impact, and they're not bound by the same rules of engagement as nation states.
That's a really good point. And the motivations behind these attacks can be so varied, right? From financial gain to political activism to just plain mischief. It's a wild west out there.
It really is. And it's not just about attacks either. The dark web is also a marketplace for tools and information, right? You can buy malware, stolen data, hacking services. It's a one-stop shop for cyber criminals. And that makes combating this type of activity even harder.
So we were talking about the dark web as this marketplace for, you know, tools and information for cyber criminals. It's really quite alarming how readily available these things are.
It is. Malware, stolen data, hacking services. It's like a digital arms bazaar. And that availability fuels a whole range of cyber attacks, from relatively simple data breaches to full-blown cyber espionage campaigns.
Right. And the motivations, as we said, can be so diverse. Think about the SK Communications hack in South Korea back in 2011. Millions of people's personal data stolen. And then just a couple of years later, those attacks on the banks and broadcasting stations.
Yeah, that 2013 attack was massive, crippled those institutions. And the finger immediately pointed towards North Korea, given the political climate at the time. It really highlighted the vulnerability of interconnected systems and the potential for disruption, even chaos.
Exactly. And it underscores the asymmetry of cyber warfare. You don't need a huge standing army to inflict significant damage in the digital realm. A small team of skilled hackers or even a single individual can be a formidable force.
Absolutely. Look at the landmass caused by Stuxnet, right? Allegedly a joint U.S.-Israeli operation targeting Iran's nuclear program. That was a game changer in terms of demonstrating the potential of cyber weapons to cause real-world physical damage.
A game changer indeed. And then you have cases like the attacks on Ethiopian government websites during that that whole dispute with Egypt over the Renaissance Dam. Cyber attacks as a tool of political pressure, almost a form of digital saber rattling.
It's a new kind of geopolitical chess match, isn't it? Played out in the digital sphere. And the players aren't always nation states. You have non-state actors, hacktivist groups, cyber criminals. It's a very complex and ever-evolving landscape.
It is. And, you know, the targets are just as varied. Diplomats, government agencies, corporations, even individuals, everyone's a potential target. Remember that phishing campaign against diplomats in Cyprus? Exposed a huge vulnerability in the EU's communication systems.
Yeah, that was a big one. And then there's the Sea Turtle campaign targeting DNS servers in dozens of countries. Really sophisticated stuff. Shows how determined these actors are and how resourceful they can be and how easily seemingly secure systems can be compromised.
So we've been talking about all these different ways privacy can be compromised online, from cookies to device fingerprinting to even metadata in photos. It's a bit overwhelming, frankly.
It is, yeah. It's like trying to navigate a minefield. You think you're safe, and then bam, another potential privacy violation. And the technology keeps evolving, so it's hard to keep up.
Exactly. You mentioned device fingerprinting, which is pretty unsettling. They can identify your device even if you clear your cookies, use a VPN. It's like a digital fingerprint, I guess.
Right. And then there are those third-party requests, you know, loading external content, scripts. It's a way for third parties to track you, even if cookies are blocked. The refer details, the HTTP POST method, it's all a bit opaque to the average user.
It is. And what about those ever cookies? They're like zombie cookies, right? They keep coming back even after you delete them. That's just creepy.
Totally creepy. And then there's HTML5, expanding local storage capabilities, access to user media like microphones and webcams. It's like opening up a whole new set of privacy vulnerabilities, even if there are some purported benefits.
Right. And we haven't even touched on big data, the sheer volume of information being collected, analyzed. It's mind-boggling. And then there's the question of who owns that data and how it's being used.
Yeah. That's a huge issue. Informational exploitation, some call it. And it's not just corporations. Think about governments using honeypot websites to track people. It's a slippery slope.
It really is. And then there's the whole issue of photos online, street photography, social media, people posting pictures without consent. It's a real ethical dilemma. And then there's face recognition technology, which takes things to a whole other level.
Absolutely. Combine that with publicly available data from social networks, and suddenly anyone with a smartphone can potentially access your personal information. It's a bit like a dystopian science fiction novel come to life. And Google Street View, I mean, talk about blurring the lines between public and private.
Yeah. I mean, it's great for navigating, but the privacy implications are significant. And the fact that they blurred faces and license plates, but it's not foolproof, it just highlights the challenges, doesn't it?
It does. And even searching online search engines, tracking your queries, building profiles, it's all connected, isn't it? It all contributes to this this erosion of privacy. And Google's new privacy policy, combining data from all their services, it's convenient, sure, but at what cost?
So we've been talking about the dark web and all these different platforms and tools that cyber criminals use, from marketplaces to forums to encrypted messaging apps. It's quite a complex landscape, isn't it?
It is, yeah. A real digital underworld. And it's constantly evolving with new platforms and technologies emerging all the time. It's like a game of cat and mouse between the criminals and law enforcement, trying to stay one step ahead of each other.
Exactly. And the motivations, as we've discussed, can be so varied, from financial gain to political activism to even just the thrill of it. It's a real mix of players out there.
Yeah. And the sheer volume of information being shared is staggering. Vulnerabilities, exploits, stolen data, it's all out there, readily available for anyone who knows where to look. And the access barriers are constantly being lowered, making it easier for even less skilled actors to get involved.
That's a really concerning point. And the way these platforms operate with their anonymity features and encrypted communications, it makes it incredibly difficult to track and monitor these activities.
It does. And then you have the added complexity of different jurisdictions and legal frameworks. What's considered illegal in one country might not be in another, which makes international cooperation all the more crucial. And then you have the ethical considerations, the balance between security and privacy.
Right. It's a delicate balance. And, you know, the whole issue of data breaches and information leaks, it's not just corporations and governments that are at risk. Individuals are increasingly becoming targets, too. Think about all that personal information we share online, on social media, through online shopping.
Yeah, it's a minefield out there, and the technology keeps evolving, so it's hard to keep up. We need to be vigilant, educate ourselves about the risks, and take steps to protect our digital lives, use strong passwords, be cautious about what we click on, keep our software updated. It's all part of the equation.
Absolutely. And I think it's important to remember that this is not just a technological issue, it's a societal one. We need to have open and honest conversations about these challenges, about the ethical implications of these technologies, and about how we can create a safer and more secure digital world for everyone. It's an ongoing process, and we all have a role to play. Well, folks, that's all the time we have for today's episode of Tech, Terra, and Trade. A huge thank you to our listeners for joining us on this journey into the dark corners of the digital world. We hope you found it informative, if a little unsettling. Until next time, stay safe online, and goodbye.
Goodbye, everyone.